This is the Cambridge English Advanced Listening Test, Test 2. I'm going to give you the instructions for this test. I'll introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you'll hear this sound. You'll hear each piece twice. Remember, while you're listening, write your answers on the question paper. You'll have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. There'll now be a pause. Please ask any questions now because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You'll hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. Extract 1. You hear two friends talking about people who were once famous but who are now relatively unknown. Now look at questions 1 and 2.
Have you read this magazine article? It's about people that were once internationally famous, like astronauts and sports people, but who now live in relative obscurity, having retired or just given up doing whatever made them famous.
I imagine that can be really tough, having to recreate a completely new existence away from the spotlight.
Well, in people's minds, they had their metaphorical 15 minutes of fame, but after that, they sort of ceased to exist. I mean, we have this odd approach. We reduce famous people to being identified only through the most pivotal thing they ever did. But that may have occurred very early in their life. But when they're recognised much later on, and that happens all the time, it means they can't forget that thing and settle into a normal life, and that's hard.
I read about one dancer who suffered a profound sense of anticlimax after her career was over, but amazingly set about channeling her energies into other activities, refusing to accept that her life would be defined only by her work, which I guess is a lesson we could all take on board.
Absolutely. Have you read this magazine article? It's about people that were once internationally famous, like astronauts and sports people, but who now live in relative obscurity, having retired or just given up doing whatever made them famous.
I imagine that can be really tough, having to recreate a completely new existence away from the spotlight.
Well, in people's minds, they had their metaphorical 15 minutes of fame, but after that, they sort of ceased to exist. I mean, we have this odd approach. We reduce famous people to being identified only through the most pivotal thing they ever did. But that may have occurred very early in their life. But when they're recognised much later on, and that happens all the time, it means they can't forget that thing and settle into a normal life, and that's hard.
I read about one dancer who suffered a profound sense of anticlimax after her career was over, but amazingly set about channeling her energies into other activities, refusing to accept that her life would be defined only by her work, which I guess is a lesson we could all take on board.
Absolutely.
Extract 2. You hear two friends talking about swimming in rivers and lakes, a practice known as wild swimming. Now look at questions 3 and 4.
Hey Sarah, how have you found your first year in our wild swimming group? What got you started anyway?
Well, I've been into water sports since I was a kid, but when I first heard about your group, it struck me as mad, if I'm honest, just too daring. I reckoned it had pushed my boundaries too far. The thought of untried environments was irresistible, though, all those rivers and lakes out there just waiting to be discovered. And the unexpected bonus is the fresh dimension it brings to the activity itself. Swimming feels much more exciting, and I love doing it with others.
Yeah, it's great for morale, swimming as a group. You positively feel others urging you on. And I also love the fact that it attracts people who wouldn't normally get together. We're a real mix, aren't we? The power of a joint passion, I guess.
And you build up a sort of collective memory bank, swimming regularly together, despite different interests away from the water. I mean, witnessing the sunrise on dawn swims wouldn't be half as good alone. And you look out for one another too. You can't overestimate the importance of that. I've made lasting friendships as well.
Hey, Sarah, how have you found your first year in our wild swimming group? What got you started, anyway?
Well, I've been into water sports since I was a kid, but when I first heard about your group, it struck me as mad, if I'm honest, just too daring. I reckoned it had pushed my boundaries too far. The thought of untried environments was irresistible, though, all those rivers and lakes out there just waiting to be discovered. And the unexpected bonus is the fresh dimension it brings to the activity itself. Swimming feels much more exciting, and I love doing it with others.
Yeah, it's great for morale, swimming as a group. You positively feel others urging you on. And I also love the fact that it attracts people who wouldn't normally get together. We're a real mix, aren't we? The power of a joint passion, I guess.
And you build up a sort of collective memory bank, swimming regularly together, despite different interests away from the water. I mean, witnessing the sunrise on dawn swims wouldn't be half as good alone. And you look out for one another too. You can't overestimate the importance of that. I've made lasting friendships as well.
Extract 3. You hear two friends talking about installing solar electricity systems in private houses. Now look at questions 5 and 6.
I noticed you've had solar electricity panels fitted on the roof of your house. How's that going?
Good. It's lucky, really. The government's just ended subsidies for solar electricity in private homes, but we just squeezed in and got 30% off the cost of installation. Scrapping subsidies is such a short-sighted idea. Now they expect people to cover the full cost. I tell you, it's no way to get people thinking green. And the press don't help, do they? All those scare stories about what a waste of money renewable energy is.
No, they don't. But is it really a good idea for the state to get mixed up in it? It kills off competition, I reckon, and that's what's keeping costs so high. Perhaps now the market will open up.
Well, we'll soon find out. Either way, we'll all have to accept things like solar power at some point.
Because oil's going to run out, you mean? We've been hearing that for years now. Everyone's going to have to stop driving and flying, live in eco-houses, all that. But it's still with us, and technology seems to be helping us keep things the way they are. Don't hold your breath, in other words. I noticed you've had solar electricity panels fitted on the roof of your house. How's that going?
Good. It's lucky, really. The government's just ended subsidies for solar electricity in private homes, but we just squeezed in and got 30% off the cost of installation. Scrapping subsidies is such a short-sighted idea. Now they expect people to cover the full cost. I tell you, it's no way to get people thinking green. And the press don't help, do they? All those scare stories about what a waste of money renewable energy is.
No, they don't. But is it really a good idea for the state to get mixed up in it? It kills off competition, I reckon, and that's what's keeping costs so high. Perhaps now the market will open up.
Well, we'll soon find out. Either way, we'll all have to accept things like solar power at some point.
Because oil's going to run out, you mean? We've been hearing that for years now. Everyone's going to have to stop driving and flying, live in eco-houses, all that. But it's still with us, and technology seems to be helping us keep things the way they are. Don't hold your breath, in other words.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two.